Hi, and welcome to episode 72 of the Studio Insider Art Podcast. This week, I'm chatting with contemporary artist Jessie Rigby. I fell in love with Jessie's beautiful abstract landscape paintings long ago, and she lives not far from me in the Macedon Ranges of Victoria. So I've been wanting to have her on the podcast for a while. Jessie and I share a lot of parallels in our careers, both of us starting out in the fashion industry before finding our art path. But Jessie has taken a different road with selling her work, pursuing a more commercial avenue of working with boutique homewares outlets and galleries. So we chatted through some of the advantages and disadvantages of working this way. We also talk through lots of practical tips such as how she works on prefabricated framed canvases, who her fave stockists and suppliers are, and of course her amazing new customised and removable art studio. I really hope you enjoy this conversation with the gorgeous Jessie as much as I enjoyed having it.
Hi, this is Susan Nellicott and welcome to the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In these episodes, I throw open the doors to my art studio practice and how I run my business as a professional artist. Whether it be candid insider chats with my studio assistants Laura and Steph, or interviews with other creatives, or answering listener questions, there is something here for every emerging artist. I hope my journey can help you feel a bit more at home in your own. Hi, Jessie.
Hi, Suze. How are you?
I'm really good. How
That's
are you?
Good. I'm very well. Very well.
It's so nice to be connecting with you because I feel like we've been following one another's journeys on Instagram for several years now.
Absolutely.
And cheering each other on, and to connect with you today is just such a pleasure. So thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor to be on your podcast, your beautiful podcast.
Oh, that's such a lovely way of saying it. Thank you. Hey, I wonder if you could start off by first telling our listeners a little bit about you, where you live, and the kind of art that you make.
Sure. I currently am residing in the Macedon Ranges in Gisborne, which is where I grew up. Actually, my parents moved to Gisborne when I was born 35 years ago. And hubby and I sort of made the decision to move back out to here just for that sort of community feel. It was sort of that time of our life where we were thinking of starting a family. You know, we wanted a little bit more space than what was on offer in the city. And yeah, we moved almost 5 years ago and sort of haven't looked back since. And it's been wonderful. And I'm sure, you know, living in beautiful Ballarat is probably something, and having a family, it's probably a value that you hold dearly as well.
Yeah, definitely. That was a big decision for us. Mark has family here in Ballarat, so that was a big deciding factor for us. And also just to get away from the city. We just had enough and we didn't really want to raise the kids in that hustle and bustle and insane traffic.
Yeah, of course, of course. No, I think it's just those core values and the way of life is, it's just different. And yeah, it's a wonderful thing. And I think more people are, especially with COVID and things like that, are doing the tree change. So it's lovely. It seems to be getting busier out where we are. So
I bet you're probably in a part. Yeah, we are too. There's a lot of people making that change at the moment, and it's totally understandable, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, it absolutely sounds like a gorgeous setting. So can you tell everyone a bit about your journey to becoming an artist and how that's shifted and changed since you've moved to Gisborne, and a little bit of your story?
Absolutely. Well, for 10 years, I actually worked in the fashion industry. And I know, listening to your podcast, you'd mentioned that you were also in the fashion industry.
But yes, I think we could debrief extensively.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So whilst that was a wonderful time of my life, and it was such a passion for me, growing up, and you know, my best friend and I, as kids, would, whenever we'd get together, we'd always be designing clothes for our fashion label, or just anything to do with fashion was always a dream. And so, you know, when it came to the crunch and moving into choosing a career, fashion was something that, Yeah, I really wanted to go into. So kind of started at the back end in production and then moved my way forward into design. And it just kind of all came to a head when I realized I wasn't getting enough creative outlet from my job. And so we were living in the city in a tiny townhouse, and I started just doing little crystal studies and sort of just watercolor, anything I could fit on my lap, because our house was so small, we didn't even have a kitchen table. So it was, yeah, crystal studies. It was spoons and sort of the way that light hit the spoons and vases just that I found or had around the house. And then, I sort of always craved the larger scale canvases, which is what I always did at high school. So doing art at high school, the larger the works, I just felt like there was more places to go. Like it was, I don't know, I've always been really comfortable with really big artworks. And so I set up a canvas against our television because that was the only spot that I could find.
That's great. Better than the TV.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Although hubby might have, you know, he didn't really have anything bad to say about that. But yeah, I sort of just created this larger canvas and put my process on, I think it was Facebook at the time, and a family friend sort of reached out and said, I love that. Are you selling it? And I sort of was like, yes, I am. Anyway, she ended up purchasing the artwork, and I thought Instagram was sort of a very new thing. And so I thought I may as well, you know, document my processes. And, you know, I've always looked at my Instagram as a bit of a portfolio. But yeah, people just started, I don't know, finding me and following me, and you kind of, you find other artists, and yeah, it all kind of flowed from there. So it's always been an incredible asset and something that has given me the opportunity to move into this being an artist full time. So that's kind of how it all came about. And I was just very, very lucky that when it came to the crunch, when it came to the leap, my husband was there to support me and sort of said, well, if you're going to give it a crack, you know, you may as well do it now. And yeah, the rest is kind of history. It's been quite a journey. I think the Instagram landscape is a bit different to what it used to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I'm sure you find. Yeah.
So many parallels there with what you're saying in my own journey, actually.
Yeah, right.
Even with the first place I posted was Facebook, and yeah, then it was just friends that bought my work first, and then it just kind of expanded. And then I think we were both coming up in Instagram at the time when, you know, it was possible to grow quite rapidly and organically.
Yes.
So I totally relate to everything you're saying there, and loving that your hub supported you all the way. Yeah. What a good bloke.
Oh, he's a great bloke.
Awesome.
He's a good egg.
So what sort of direction has your work evolved in since those early days? Can you describe your artwork for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I am an abstract artist, and I generally work on canvas using acrylic and gouache mediums. I've actually just started dabbling in oil paints, which is something I've always wanted to do, but being a bit time poor, it's been something that I've kind of put on the back burner. But yes, just having a discussion with another artist recently about pigment and just achieving different textures and things like that, it just kind of got me excited. And so I invested in some beautiful Art Spectrum oil paints recently, although I kind of got home and went a bit bananas and started having a play with those and then put them away. And I was like, oh yes, and I'll have a go at those next week. And then of course all the other things, all life stuff has happened. And so yes, I'm excited to get those out again. But awesome. Yeah, it's the larger style artworks is sort of where I feel more comfortable. And I don't know about you, Suze, but when you sell artworks, do your clients generally go for larger size?
Yeah,
artists?
I'm definitely a larger scale artist. It's really interesting. I wonder if it's something to do with canvas being fabric and us used to these huge swathes of fabric on cutting tables and feeling really comfortable playing at that kind of scale. I was just sort of musing on that as you were describing your beginnings in fashion as well, because it's definitely the same for me. I think a lot of artists like resonate really well with a particular size. This sort of, yeah, I'm definitely a big gestural painter and I just want to get bigger and bigger, actually. I was lusting after that one I saw in your studio on Instagram this week, that huge, huge mama you are painting.
Oh, my goodness. It's been so fun. It's been so fun. It's, I feel like there's just more space to, more places to go on a large canvas, whereas when you're creating small works, it's trying to fit all of the details and the feelings into this small space. It's just near impossible. So
yes,
they probably come across as, I don't know, I find myself really struggling with the smaller works and spending as much time if not more on the small works as I do the large work. So it's so funny, isn't it?
It's interesting. I feel really comfortable working small when it's on paper because I feel like I can just be really gestural and just treat it as a sketch and often the works are really nice, but I can do work on exactly the same size on a canvas and I just immediately tighten up, and there's something about a stretched canvas, I think, that can make you contract, although I don't feel that way on a large canvas. It's really quite strange.
It is, isn't it? Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Hmm. But it's an interesting thing, I think, for artists in general to pay attention to, is what sort of scale they find they work best at, because they're often the works that are going to resonate with buyers. So absolutely. Very interesting point you bring up there.
Yeah.
Hey, one of the things I've really enjoyed watching come to fruition on Instagram recently is the customized and removable art studio you've built. I've been particularly inspired by some of your overhead storage solutions. That's had me dreaming in my own mind. Can you tell us a bit about the kind of studio that you've created and what's inspired it?
Absolutely. I would love to share what's the process that happened there. It was when we built our house 5 years ago, I kind of just moved into a bedroom, and that was the time when, you know, hubby and I had discussed me taking this on full time. And what happened with moving into a bedroom is that, as you would probably know, as you start to grow and gather more clients or more, you know, galleries or stockists, your supplies start to increase, and so artworks and canvases and frames start to move out into the household, and then dogs start to knock frames over and frames get broken and then paint gets on floors and walls. And so it was sort of when Seb came along, my son was born, that we started to look into an alternative to me being in one of our bedrooms, because, you know, he was only going to get bigger and start moving more and more. And we're very lucky. We've got a little bit of space in our backyard. And so we thought we would, look at just a different options that would suit what I did in my day-to-day job. We looked at lots of DIY sort of solutions, so modular sort of spaces, but you know, the fit out and things that would come with that, the installation, the plumbing, the electrical work, everything that would come with a DIY seemed to be quite daunting for us. And so we ended up making an inquiry with a local builder just to kind of put the feelers out and see what, if this would be an option for us. It ended up being not an exorbitant amount, and especially not for what I've got now, the structure that I have now, but it was a lot more than what we were sort of thinking we wanted to spend on it. But I did a lot of research and talked to my accountant, and there's a little bit of a loophole where, coming in under a small business, it was something being a removable structure. So my art studio is actually removable. So if we sell our house or move somewhere else, I can actually take it with me.
That's so brilliant. What a stroke of genius. Oh, it's so location independent.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And this technicality just meant that it actually became a tax write-off. So it was something that I would love for other artists or small business owners to know about, because it made it possible, and we always try to support local where we can. So the builder that we engaged were brilliant, and we sort of went through a bit of a checklist of what was required for the space. I also spoke to lots of other artists or artists that I knew had external dwellings for their studios and just said, you know, what do you use? What do you need? What do you wish you had have done with your space? You know, all of the important things that are required. So it was, you know, a desk area, so which is where I'm sitting now, a desk area for a computer, storage for all of your admin things, you know, a printer, a packing desk for prints and smaller artworks, floor space for packing large artworks. Storage was really important. So I actually had all custom built shelving so I can store all of my blank canvases and artworks that I've completed.
Yeah, that's the part I've been lusting after when you came ahead as well. So good.
It's so wonderful. Although having said that, it is, I kind of need to extend and I don't think I'm not going to
already?
Extend. I'm not going to extend. I'm going to work smarter, Suze. I'm going to work smarter. But it's something, I guess, when you're thinking about, you know, all of the materials that you have floating around the house. And yeah, I just wish I had have probably gone for a little bit more storage. I think storage, you know, it's sort of something that was drummed into us when we were building a house and the importance of it. But yes, the overhead mezzanine, when I was doing research and sort of, I actually started looking at tiny houses. So that was sort of where the idea of this smaller space came from, because it's a 9 meter by 3.5 meter wide dwelling.
Okay. So it's not huge.
So no, it's not huge. It's we didn't want to really interfere with too much of our backyard. And also we're so lucky where we are. We've got a beautiful view of the Macedon Ranges, which we didn't want to lose either.
Yeah.
So we thought, if we can go up in height, it just meant that we could create storage space. So a mezzanine, which is when you look at the tiny houses, or I don't know if you've ever looked at tiny houses. And
I have a little bit, not in detail, but you have. But yeah, lots of inspiration there for smart ideas.
Yeah, definitely. And storage solutions. So a lot of these tiny houses had a mezzanine level, and usually that had sort of a bathroom area underneath, but they would always have their bed, because obviously that would probably cover the most floor space, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, why not? You know, if we can go up in height, like obviously the height, there were limitations, but it wasn't too much of an issue. And so if we can create a mezzanine, all of the things like bubble wrap, I'm sure you have gigantic, big rolls of bubble wrap. So they were in our laundry and, you know, the dogs kept running into the bubble wrap.
Yeah. I take over part of one of my daughter's bedrooms, actually. My girls haven't yet figured out that one bedroom is significantly larger than the other. Hope they never listen to this podcast. So I've cornered off one corner of my daughter's bedroom and it's just boxes and canvases and the giant roll of bubble wrap. And, yeah, I actually have just had someone here at the house over the last couple of weeks looking at putting wardrobes in our bedroom, which has been on hanging rails from my fashion business for 10 years.
Yeah, right.
And I got him into the studio and he actually said, because I've got really high ceilings in my house, and he actually suggested building a mezzanine in here for that exact purpose. So I've been spying yours going, what do I need? And just, you know, going Pinterest mad.
Absolutely.
It's all, I've got to save up for that one again, because that's got to come up after the bedroom wardrobe. But it's exciting. Yeah. And I understand how nerding out you can get on that topic. It's just a rabbit hole, isn't it?
It really, truly is. But, yeah, I think things just become part of the furniture, like, you know, cardboard boxes. We're trying to get the pram into the garage, in and out of the garage, and there were cardboard boxes everywhere. And so, yes, but they are now in the mezzanine and our garage is relatively clear. There might still be a couple of canvases in there that I couldn't fit in for my last delivery. But, yes, I'm doing pretty well, pretty well.
Good on you. Oh, it sounds so exciting. And I've seen the scale of the works that you're able to do in there. So you've really done well with making the most of that height and being able to fit those big canvases in.
Hey guys, are you loving what you're hearing on the podcast and craving a bit more from my studio? Then consider checking out my e-course trilogy, Painting as a Practice, playful classes in mixed media painting designed to nurture your authentic style. If you're a beginner painter or seeking some fresh new approaches in your art, then check out Chapter 1, Laying Solid Foundations. Or if you'd like to learn more about my ways with colour and mixed media art supplies, then Chapter 2 is a great option. And if you're seeking to really hone your creative style or learn how to create a series of larger works on canvas, then Chapter 3 is a brilliant option. Each chapter is just $77 each, or you can pick up the discounted bundle of all three courses for just $219. To learn more, be sure to head on over to the link in the show notes or susannethercutstudio.com/online-classes. I'll see you soon.
Absolutely. It's I actually had the recent Gigantor artwork that I've been working on. I had a little bit of an issue with the skylight. So obviously
I as saw an artist, that.
Yes.
Solution.
Yes. So I have the garden umbrella in here.
Yeah, I saw that. You just gotta make it work.
And it's worked a treat. It's I need to get it out again because it's driving me a little bit crazy. But it's actually worked a treat. It was a good fix for that short time. So
yes.
Yeah. The things we do, so, hey.
The things we do and the things you discover that just need a little bit of modification, like maybe a blind on a skylight or something, or wherever
yes,
that light is
right.
coming from, all the little finishing touches that are to come.
Correct. Yep.
Hey, right. I wanted to just dig into the business stuff a little bit, if that's okay.
Of course.
So I've noticed that you've taken quite a commercial road with your art, and you sell your work through several boutiques, homewares outlets, and also galleries with great success. I'd love to hear more about why you chose this direction for selling your work and how it's benefited you as an artist.
Sure. The homeware store scenario was probably something almost with the social media. It was sort of something, I mean, you know, 5-10 years ago, I don't sort of really recall walking into a homeware store and seeing original artworks, whether or not it was just because gallery spaces were where you went to buy art. And then I had a couple of businesses approach me, and I approached a couple of businesses as well, and we sort of trialed a couple of works, and something that I've really noticed with the general public is that people, I think, want to invest in art. They know that they love art, but they don't really know how to buy it. And so going into a boutique or a homeware store and, you know, seeing something that looks like their home, seeing a buffet or a couch or a cushion or something, seeing it in a space that they can identify with really helps them visualize it in their own living space. So
definitely.
Yeah, I found it quite successful for myself, and I know a lot of artists, I think, have the same response. So it's been really wonderful. It's also great to work with galleries and sort of have that balance, and experience, I suppose. But it's just something that's really worked for me, which has been very, very lucky.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's something that's worked really well for Steph as well, which we've talked about a bit on the podcast. She's been, and I don't recall it beyond 5 or 10 years ago either, really seeing much original artwork in homeware stores either. I think it is, I mean, as far as I know, not that I'm out there shopping that regularly, but I don't recall seeing it either. And I used to be in retail. So
of course,
I think there has been a shift.
Yeah.
So are you, when you first started working with those homewares brands, were you putting artwork?
Artwork stuff.
Were you putting your artwork in on consignment, or were you wholesaling, or do you mind talking a bit about how that end of the relationship worked?
Yeah, of course. Most of it was on consignment. So it was sort of an arrangement that you go into, obviously, when you start discussing with either a business or a gallery. You know, consignment percentages and things are something that's always discussed at the beginning. And just what sort of the process is. If works don't sell, I think it's really important to have a mutual communication where they're giving feedback about what clients are asking for.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to size, format, so whether or not it's landscapes, portraits, squares, sizes, framed or unframed, because a lot of people, I think most people love a framed artwork. It sort of just finishes it off. But then some artworks look beautiful without a frame as well. So, yeah, just having that mutual communication with a business was always very important. And I guess on the journey, it's just learning which businesses have the same sort of values as you do, you know, that mutual respect. And obviously, being a mum, I'm rather time poor, as you probably are too. Being a mum, running a business, having a job, you know how, you know,
yes, time is precious. It makes you a very efficient.
very efficient. So I think it's really important to set boundaries and be transparent, communicate often. And it's just been, quite a few years in the process. And I'm really happy with the relationships that I've built over the years. So everything seems to run smoothly and it does really well. It's good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, do you have any tips for any artists out there who are interested in selling their work through outlets like you do, such as how to establish a connection with a retailer or what kind of markup they should expect on their work if they're going to sell it that way?
Yeah, sure. I think it's important to put yourself out there and approach probably brands or businesses that you feel have the same aesthetic that you do. Obviously, if you sort of have one style and you're approaching a brand that, you know, sells a different sort of style, then maybe the relationship or it might not be as successful. Yeah. So, for example, if you do, you know, more abstract, colourful things, it might be, you know, more of a fun and contemporary business rather than, you know, someone that's, you know, highly or heavily focused on Scandinavian style or something like that. Just looking at the types of businesses that you are approaching. Also sort of creating some boundaries, I think, are really important. You've really got to stand up for yourself. And I think back when I started doing this, I really noticed that not that art was undervalued, but people expected a lot of art for free, or maybe it was undervalued. I don't know.
I think that's a general thing, that art can be not valued by a large section of the community.
Yeah.
I don't think it's everyone, but it's definitely a thing. And artists and art, being an artist as a profession, is not as valued as other professions. I think that'd be a pretty fair statement.
Yeah, I think people sort of don't realise the monetary value that goes into creating an artwork. So, you know, you've got your canvases, you've got your frames, you've got your transport, you've got your admin, you've got packaging materials, you've got your paint and medium, you know, materials. There's so much that goes into creating an artwork. It's not just your time and your soul. It's you actually, do invest quite a lot of money into creating an artwork. So it's probably something that I've had to really push for in the past and really stand my ground, which is, you kind of, when you're presented with an opportunity, it's really hard to navigate and kind of feel your way through and sort of go, but if I do just give something to this person or this business for, you know, X amount, then maybe I will get X amount of followers.
It's it's a tough place too, I think, especially when you're starting out, because you've kind of got to break through somehow,
That's right.
And get your work out there. So I think it is a really fine line.
It is.
You have to straddle, and you just have to make the best decision you can at the time to try and place it in places that you feel like you can grow in. And, and then you can sort of tighten up the ship later, I guess.
Yeah, that's
true. I don't
know.
I think it's a fine line, and I think you kind of have to do it a little bit at the start. Do you think?
Yeah, I guess so. It's, like I said, making those rules and setting those boundaries. But maybe the rules and boundaries are that you do have, you know, two or three works that you are donating to a cause or a fundraiser or a giveaway or I'm not sure. It's, you know, so, and then, but not sort of exceeding that, because obviously, like I said, it can become very costly after that. But
well, it can. I mean, I get so many requests in my inbox for donations to things, and if I gave to absolutely all of them, I would have nothing left. Yes,
that's right, which is wonderful.
So you've just got to, I think that's really great advice, actually, to be really clear about what you're prepared to give away and what you aren't, perhaps before you go in and have that negotiation, so that you make it a bit clearer for yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess valuing your art, so sitting down and actually doing the numbers and working out, you know, the time and the money that you have invested in a piece, so you can price accordingly. And obviously, as I'm sure most artists, you know, you always start off with your price range at quite an affordable price point, because you do want to gather those sales and sort of gain that momentum. And you know, I think I've almost reached the threshold of my price points now. Like, I'm really happy with where my price points sit for my client, and my clients seem to be the same. And so, but that's been a very, very gradual thing sort of that I've done over the last 6 years. So
it's an interesting one. And I'd be interested to know if you feel like having that background in fashion, which is very much a business in the numbers game in terms of pricing, if that had an impact on you in approaching your art
100%
in that manner.
Yep. Yeah. Definitely. Making sure that you can make a living so that you're, you know, you do can create some kind of profit so you can pay yourself a wage is very important. Also, timelines and things like that. I'm sure you would know, you know, the fashion industry is so heavily based on timelines, that timelines and meeting clients' expectations and also making sure that you're not exhausting yourself and overcommitting yourself is really important.
Which is someone you learn the hard way.
Definitely. So yeah, that's definitely been an asset for me.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Yeah, many years, it definitely has an impact, doesn't it? And I think it's really interesting, and this is something that I noticed when I had my fashion business, was that pricing is actually a bit of an art, and it's not just based on figures. You, as you've mentioned, you know, it's taken you a while to figure out the price point that works best for you and your customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a process that's always in play. And I know it's something that I'm always looking at, and I'm still actually refining around that, because I've been shifting some of my pricing models a bit over the last year. And I just thought I'd mention that for anyone out there, that's, because I know I get asked about pricing a lot, and it's such a personal journey, and also something that the market tells you about as well.
That's
so you can only try putting a price on something and seeing how people respond, and that will very quickly tell you if you've pitched too high.
Yes, absolutely.
And also if you've pitched too low, you know,
if
everything sells out really quickly and you're worried your prices might be a bit low, they may be.
That's right.
They may need to go up a bit. So
absolutely. And also establishing, I think, you know, when you are pricing your artwork, it is kind of backing yourself and having confidence in yourself. And that's something that's really, really difficult to do, because it's always broadcasting, well, this is what I think I'm worth, but it's not, you know, it's, you know, having imposter syndrome and, you know, doubting your abilities, or, you know, but would people really pay that much for what I've just done? I don't know. Like, it's a very sensitive part of running a business. Well, and promoting yourself as an artist as well, I think.
Absolutely. And it's possibly one of the toughest parts, I think, because it brings up people's sense of self-worth.
That's right.
And I think it's so important that you create a barrier between your self-worth as a person and how the selling of your art reflects on you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to be very clear about that. And that can be incredibly hard to do, because we're mostly very soft, sensitive little creatures, us artists.
That's right. I could not agree with you more.
Yeah. And do you feel that you've had to negotiate that particular area of protecting yourself and making sure you're looking out for yourself more in the area of retail than you have in the area of galleries or in self-representing?
That's a really good question. I think it's, you know, things are always going to get to you. And I think, you know, the stresses and anxieties of being an artist at the beginning definitely affected me a lot more. I am very lucky, like you, Suze. I have a studio assistant who works with me twice a week, Beth, who is just a lifesaver. And that was probably one of the best things I've done. So to be able to outsource those stressful and anxious things that you do, that, you know, you feel could reflect on your name or your brand, I think is such an asset to your mental health, because, you know, they can set it aside from, you know, it's another email, I suppose, whereas when you're attaching your name to something, and it could be quite not confronting, but it could be a very difficult subject to that you're discussing with a gallery or with a business. Yeah, setting those aside, I think, has been one of the best things I've done. But yeah, it's definitely something that has affected me less, I guess, just because of experience. It's all sort of been experience that, you know, at the end of the day, we're all human. And, you know, I'm running a business and I have things that I need to achieve in a day. And there's, I guess, no point dilly-dallying around the fact. But yeah, also being, you know, polite and fair, firm but fair, I think is really important. Yeah.
Oh, I love hearing you talk about that. Oh, that's great that you have your studio assistant, Beth.
Yes.
So she's doing some of those difficult emails for you.
She does.
Awesome. What else does she do?
She helps me with packing and sealing artwork, so spraying. Yeah, she kind of manages a lot of my print side of the business. So tracking sheets or running sheets, we have something that with my art printer that works really efficiently. And these are all things that we've been workshopping for probably the last 2 years, and we're finally at a stage where everything runs really well. She can access them remotely, so she can work from home if she needs to. Obviously, with COVID, Google Sheets, I'm pretty sure, got a very good workout from the whole entire world. So it's just, you know, streamlining everything. I also created a description of how my commission process works. So this includes just sort of a short excerpt of myself and then the sizes, then my most popular sizes that I offer, the freight costs Australia-wide, just the way that the commission process works. So I can send that package to a client, and or Beth can send the package to the client, and, you know, it's kind of has eventually cut out all of the questions that I have got back. So, you know, all the back and forth that you have with clients about discussing commissions is, yeah, it's sort of taken care of in one little package.
Yeah, I've done a very similar thing, and I'm actually about to review it again, because I find that that process gets refined and you have better ideas over time. And
yes,
it's something you can do once you've got a bit of experience under your belt with a few clients, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Working with all different
that's
people.
That's so great too. Yeah, totally. Oh, that's wonderful that you've got that help in-house that's keeping things going for you. She's going to be worth her weight in gold when that new baby comes.
I know.
You're expecting another one, aren't you?
That's right. That's right. Another baby on the way. So he's due, another little boy is due.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. We're so excited. I'm so clucky at the moment. My two of my sister-in-laws have just had little babies, and I'm sort of, clucking around like a clucky chicken. So I'm ready.
As you should be.
That's right. But yeah, it's just those anxieties of, you know, if time is of the essence at the moment, adding another little baby into the mix is going to be a whole nother realm. So, and a whole nother restructure of family life and business life and, you know, all of those things.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, I'm curious to know, and I'm sure all our listeners are curious to know, how you found Beth.
So, kind of a funny story. I used to have Beck that worked with me, and we used to work together on a Melbourne label in the city. But she we sort of started traveling into work together back when I was working a full-time job. And she then went to study at uni, and I sort of said, I need some help. And she said, well, I would love, you know, a job that's part-time. And so we started working together, and then she moved to the Netherlands. And so Beth was found through a friend of a friend who they'd worked together at a school in the past. And just, I guess it's just talking to people and finding out what requirements people have, you know, their livelihoods and things, you know, if you've got, you know, I have this job, but I'm looking for a little bit more work, or yeah, it just kind of all of the stars aligned with Beth. And so she has two boys of their own, and she lives in Tilden, which is also in the Macedon Ranges. It's about
I often drive through that area actually when I drive from Ballarat back to my parents' place, which is in Oxley, which is near Wangaratta. And I, rather than going the freeway, which is so boring, I always drive across.
And
I always drive through Tilden. Beautiful. And pretty.
Yeah,
that part of the Wombat State Forest is gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. It's really lovely. We're very lucky out in the ranges. Yeah, so Beth kind of came along, I think, about 3 years ago now. And yeah, we've just sort of been working together to, like I said, to streamline all of the processes and things. But yeah, it probably takes a good 12 months, you know, which I'm sure you find with your studio assistants, for how you run things and just what's involved in communicating with everyone, really.
It's also just got to be such the right fit for the person that's working for you as well. Laura's actually going to be finishing up with me, so she's been with me for many years, but she's just got other things she's needing to do, and it's, you know, been a beautiful time. So I'm sort of back in that zone thinking about how I'm going to tackle that the second time around. And I've been, of course, very fortunate with Steph, who's also gone on to become a very successful artist in her own right. So I'm finding that I'm going to need to be looking out for somebody new or new people, and I'm just thinking about all the different ways I can go about that. And
I know,
so thanks for letting me know how that one happened. I'll add that to my little bank of research.
I think it's sort of all been luck, really.
It is, and it's I have to work with people. I don't know about you, but I really have to work with people that I feel really connected with, and, you know, a genuine sense of camaraderie and friendship with. So yeah, definitely. It's that's important to me. So
absolutely,
the way you've gone about it sounds exactly my style.
I think it might be.
Yeah. Hey, I noticed the other day on Insta when you were posting time lapses of that giant commission that we were talking about a bit earlier.
Yeah.
That you were working on it already framed, and yes. I was like, how are you doing that without getting? I mean, that's like to me such a risky thing.
Terrifying.
But also. I'm really curious to know about your process. I'm actually going through this process myself at the moment with looking at new canvas and framing suppliers, because I actually haven't sold a lot of work that's framed up until now, because most of it was going to the US. So it was all coming off stretcher bars and being shipped rolled in a tube anyway.
Of course, yeah.
But I've found with COVID, with all of the issues that happened with shipping, that there's a lot less of those orders coming through, and also just life is so challenging over there at the moment. And I'm finding there's more local business. So I'm reviewing that whole process. So I'm really curious to know how you go about ordering canvases and frames, because you're obviously doing both at the same time and not having them framed after.
Before Seb was born, I was actually working with a wonderful local framer who does the most beautiful job. But once Seb came along, trying to get artworks into a car that doesn't have a car seat, and coordinating all of that and then picking them up again. And just moving artworks became really, really challenging for me, not just time-wise, but it just became a really difficult process.
You need to say no more. I know what you're saying. I live with that process too, and I've got a station wagon, so they often have to go on the roof.
That's right. So, just looking into some different options and talking to some different artists about the products and businesses that they were using. I'm currently still working with my local framer every so often, just because I still have canvases that don't have frames that I like to get framed. But most of my works actually come stretched. So I've got two options. I buy rolls of canvas from art stretchers in Northcote and have it delivered to a framer in Thomastown. They then stretch the canvas for me, frame it, and I can unscrew the frame. When it comes to starting the artwork, I unscrew the frame, store the frame, and then once the artwork is complete, I seal it and then re-screw it all back together. So it just means that I can do it all, yeah, in the safety of my own home or studio. And it just means that, yeah, the next contact for that artwork is generally a courier coming to pick it up. So yeah, it just cuts out, yeah, all of that time that just wasn't working for me.
Because shipping and packaging and transporting, it takes so much time. Absolutely. And there's so much risk involved in the damage of the artworks that's the stage I'm at too, where I just want to reduce it to the absolute bare minimum.
Yeah.
And then, also, thanks for sharing that.
No, that's right. I was going to say, and then this giant artwork, I have actually taped it in using framer's tape. And I'm sure painter's tape would probably be a good one. I was thinking about that the other day.
I couldn't see if there was tape on it. Yeah. I kind of thought there must be.
Yes, yes. It's brown tape, so it camouflages with the frame.
Yeah.
But I was so scared of taking the frame off just because they're such long lengths of timber. I was worried they might bow. And then storing it somewhere was just going to be near impossible. And so I thought I'll just tape this in. Usually just as an insurance, I would much rather take the frame off just to make sure, because obviously I know that a lot of your work, you work with, you know, watercolors and you know, if you've got pooling down the base of your artwork, then you don't want to frame anywhere near that. So
no, that's right. Yeah, which you probably don't do quite as much of.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for filling me
in. No, of course.
You're answering a lot of questions.
I'm happy
that are very
to talk about all the suppliers as well. Because yeah.
Oh well, thank you. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Feel free to share anyone that you found to be great, because I know that's a big thing, is finding the right people to work with. And I'm always very free with that information too, because once you've found someone good, you want to support them as well.
Definitely. So there's another one that I work with is Southern Boy in the Mornington Peninsula. So
I have just ordered canvases from them actually.
Fabulous.
And they had their sale recently. Yep. So I'm trying them out.
Great. Yep. So Southern Boy do a great job and they deliver to Gisborne, which is, that's another little problem that can arise sometimes. People go, well, no, we're not going to Gisborne because that's too far. Yep. And yes, and Opticon is the other one in Thomastown. So they're the ones that use the canvas that I really love from Art Stretchers in Northcote.
Okay.
Yeah. So it just depends on, you know, if you're wanting to use a Belgian linen or something a little bit more special, or just a different type of canvas or something that you are used to working with, then that's always an option. And it probably is an option with Southern Boy as well, to be honest. But yeah, I'm
do you ever paint on unstretched canvas and then send it down to be stretched and framed after?
It's sort of something that I haven't really done much of, just because my workspace has never really been set up for that. So I did do a couple of smaller studies on canvas. I had some spare canvas and wanted just to have a big play around. So I did a couple of works that were quite small. So they sort of, I could just use a bit of floor space and I ended up having those stretched. And then I think they were for a fundraiser actually. But it was fun, but it's just something that my workspace is not really set up for. So I do prefer to work on stretch canvases. Yeah.
Yeah, which is obviously, if you've got commission work coming in, that kind of way of working works really well, because you know where it's going. It's coming in, it's going out.
That's right.
You're not having to consider where to store it.
Yes.
I've just been doing a lot of really large gestural personal work lately.
Beautiful.
And I've just been like, I just don't want to use stretched canvases because of the storage issue. So I've just rigged something up in the studio that I'm really looking forward to testing out, that's going to enable me to just roll my roll of canvas down over the top.
Fantastic.
And have a play and then just chop it off and roll it up and move on to the next one. So I'm really looking forward to how that affects my process actually.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. No, I've been following all of your beautiful paper studies on the Instagram. So, yeah, I love following that journey.
Have you
allocated time to doing that?
I absolutely did. It was a very conscious choice, because I find it can be a bit tricky sometimes. There have been years when I've had just so many back-to-back commissions that I just have no space to create my own work. And So this year, when I did my painting as a practice challenge month in February, I worked really hard at the end of last year to save up so that I could have a good couple of months stretch of just focusing in on, well, some of it's commission work and, you know, the kind of bread and butter work that I do, but then space to really play and explore the things that have been playing around in my mind for a while. And it's been such a lovely time. And then it'll probably be hunkering down to a bit more commission work, et cetera, after that. But it's just been the best thing. It's been really nice to take a little break from commissions and just pursue that for a while. But I had to really plan for it.
Yeah, you know, you've definitely. Save up for this.
Block in the time, but also save up for it because the bills don't go away.
That's true. You still sort of need to keep that side of life turning over, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So thanks for asking. I'm really enjoying it. It's great. A lovely process.
I need to do something.
Sorry.
I was going to say I need to do something like that, and I found myself allocating time when Seb was born last time. So on my maternity leave that I gave myself, that was something was really beneficial, and I could just
and
really
it's
work
so
on
important
passion projects. So it's wonderful. It was glorious, a glorious time, and I found my style really changed after that. So more colourful and more free and almost liberated. It was wonderful. I'm excited about maternity leave this time as well.
I'm so glad. I think these periods are way more important than people realize sometimes. There's often an image out there that, you know, once you've found a style that sells, you've kind of arrived and that's what you're going to do for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I just can't do that because I get very dissatisfied creatively.
Yes.
But also, I don't think it's what we're meant to do as artists. I think we're meant to retreat for periods of time and really spend time refining our work and feeling out what's coming next. And you can't just make that happen. It's not like turning on a tap. You have to work your way through in a process with that. So I'm so glad to hear you're going to be giving yourself that.
Thank you.
Permission in your second maternity leave.
Yes. It'd be great. It'd be wonderful.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you, I know that there is so much that I wished I'd known way back when, in the early days of becoming an artist, a professional one. Can you share a couple of things you wished you'd known that could have saved you some grief later on in your art career?
Sure. Knowing that there is such a wonderful community of artists that want to be generous with their knowledge and their learnings, don't hesitate to reach out to people, because generally artists are very, very happy to, you know, have a conversation and share what they've learned. Because I guess right at the beginning, I really felt, going from working for a company and having people around you all the time and then going into that solo aloneness, like it was something I found myself having 45-minute conversations with people who were, you know, someone from Greenpeace who was trying to get me to sign up to something, and asking them how they got into, you know, what they were doing. So it can be really isolating, and it's something that probably people have really suffered through and had to deal with COVID and the pandemic. And I think just reaching out to other artists that you follow or admire or interested in, and asking the questions that you want to ask and not feel like you can't. I love that people reach out and, you know, ask questions about brushes or freight options or just anything, really. I love being able to help or mentor or whatever you want to call it, because it is such a wonderful community to be a part of. And I think, you know, having that support, another wonderful asset of social media is that connectedness, you know, that artists have with one another now. And I guess it's something, I don't know how it used to work, but whether or not it was, you know, getting together for art fairs, you know, weekends away at art fairs, I don't know. But it's, I guess just saying to people that don't be afraid to ask the questions or make the connections that you want to make.
That's beautiful, generous advice, Jessie. And I mean, I guess that's been the greatest blessing for me with having the podcast, is it enables me to reach out and you know, and I often get to ask questions that I'm curious about myself, but also those that I know are in they're part of the community questions because I receive them all the time. Yeah. So, and it was such a blessing to be able to connect with people through COVID through the podcast. I never really felt disconnected because I had that in my life. Yeah. So just start a podcast.
That's right. But even, you know, and learning about your podcast and then listening to it, you know, it's such a brilliant asset, and it just, it solidifies all of the things that you think are happening, you know, and you know, your own journey solidifies your own journey as an artist as well. So, and to go, oh my gosh, that's what I did, or that's how I think, or, you know, that's how I run things.
Yeah. Well, that's the screwy thing that goes through my head too. Which are actually, I think, the most valuable of the episodes because, yeah, let's face it, they're the things that you're often alone in your studio turning yourself inside out about, thinking, oh, my God, it's just me.
Yeah.
But then when we can be open about it and talk about it and air about it and have a discussion, I love how the conversations here spread across social media and I get emails, and it's just beautiful and so soul-affirming to know that that I'm contributing in that way. And every guest such as yourself that comes on the podcast and shares in such a beautiful open way about their own journey and all the practical things, it just creates more of a sense of oneness and community, and it's just a beautiful thing.
Very special. And we thank you, Suze, for fulfilling that wonderful, I feel like there was kind of a void. You know, it was so hard. Aww. It was so hard, you know, right at the beginning, and you kind of doubt everything you do, and you do have to go the hard way around things to work, you know, find solutions and work things out. And you know, it is, like I said previously, it is such an emotional journey as well. And that's, yeah, why I sort of said, you know, back yourself, set your boundaries. But that is probably one of the hardest things that you'll do. So, yeah, knowing that everyone else is doing the same thing and that you have that support is a wonderful asset. Yeah.
And just to know that there's a community there that can catch you.
Yes.
If you do fall, you 100%. Know, because we don't always have successes. We all have failures along the way and rejections and
yep.
things that it's hard for our heart to accept.
That's
and
right.
You know, and I found by sharing that and allowing other people to see that you always receive back so much support and understanding and empathy, and it gives you solace and it gives you courage to move on and keep moving in perhaps another direction, because it's all just redirection to you finding your path. I mean, we all have, I think, such different paths that are unfolding for us, even though we're all artists. The way that we all go about it can be so different in the way that we sell our art in the world and, well, everything really.
That's right. I mean, there's not really any rules. And
and it's really just a matter of figuring out what works best for you.
That's
and
right.
Your life and your business and your customers. It's this process of filtering almost.
That's right.
And
the magic I was just going to say, the magic of the social media community or the social media art community is that I would say 95% of the community you've probably actually never met. You feel like you know people because you follow their journey, because their journeys are documented. But, yeah, I remember meeting, you know, a group of artists for the first time and being like, I know you. Because, and I guess art is such a big part of the soul and who you are as people, that you already know each other. So without meeting each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally make sense. I think artists have a depth to them and a willingness to engage that's actually probably a little bit deeper than what you find out there generally in the community.
Yeah.
And I think when we find one another and we resonate with one another, we actually form really strong bonds and feel very free to share and communicate about quite deep things.
Yes.
Even if it might just be in a social media relationship. And I'm totally nodding my head as you were saying that, because I've often met people for the first time in person after that social media connection, and it is just like meeting an old friend.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be in person. So that's just a beautiful thing, I think. And I really cherish the community of artists. So Jessie, let everyone know where they can find you on the interwebs and the socials.
On the interwebs and socials.
Also what you might have coming up.
Yes. Yeah. I can be found on Instagram at @jessierigby_art. My website is www.jessierigby.com. I do have a Facebook, but I kind of have, I'm a very, very slack with my Facebook.
Yeah, me too.
it's just a whole nother arm of, you know, social media that I just have sort of almost chosen not to invest in because I can't do it all.
Yeah.
As you would know. Yep. And the things I have coming up, I'm going to have another baby. I'm kind of winding down.
How many weeks to go?
I'm 25 weeks today, actually. And I'm hoping that this little bub comes a little bit earlier, like Seb did. It was funny, my last maternity leave, he came 2 weeks early, and it was the day after the cot arrived, and I had finished up with Beth and kind of went, okay, well, I'll just go and start this huge 1.5 by 1.5 meter artwork because I'm going to be waiting around for another couple of weeks, maybe two, maybe 3 weeks. And so I started this gigantic painting and then went out to cook dinner and then my contractions started. So
yeah, right. I was 2 weeks early with my first one too.
Yeah, right. How funny.
We've got a lot of parallels, lady.
We do. We really do. So
I hope that the second one is a beautiful journey for you, this second boy.
Too.
That'll be just beautiful.
Me too. Thanks, Sue.
So you're going to wind down a little bit in advance this time, knowing you might be a bit early?
I think so. I say that, but then I'm like, well, what else am I going to do if I...
Yeah,
if
right.
I suddenly go into baking and cooking, well, I'll probably just eat all of the baking and cooking and well, I could be painting or I don't know. I'm not sure. I'll probably wind down with commissions and then probably start my, like I said to you before, my maternity, my personal art time, which will be wonderful.
Yeah.
It'll be lovely.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation today, Jessie.
Thank
it was so
you,
lovely
Sue.
To actually talk to you in person.
You too.
Hope
you
we get
too.
To do it again. And thanks for all the generous advice that you and connections that you've shared today. I really appreciate
it's
that.
It's a pleasure.
I'm sure all the listeners do.
Such a pleasure. Anytime.
thanks, darling. Well, you take care. Best of luck with Bubs and we'll catch up soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Suze.
Thanks, Jessie. Bye.
Bye.
You can always see more of my art over at susannethercutt.com. And if you're interested in learning from me or checking out the podcast notes, you can find those over on susannethercuttstudio.com. I love hearing your comments and feedback, so feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, then why not snap a screenshot and share it in your Instagram stories? Be sure to tag me at susan.nethercutt so I can say hi. And if you've got a great idea for a future podcast episode or know someone who you think I should interview, then pop on over to susannethercuttstudio.com/podcast, hit the button in the header image to shoot me an email. Catch you next time.